Welcome to a special bonus episode of York Hospital Ball. This is the Supporters Trust events which I've been hosting at Brew York first Wednesday of every month since September. Each month the club send down some players from the first team and some club ambassadors, but this podcast is very much just a collection of those first team players. It tells a bit of a story over the season really, and I thought it would be a good addition to York Hospital Ball. They are a little bit more informal, so compared to like the standard Hospital Ball podcast. So, for example, there is a bit of colourful language, not just from the players, but myself as well. So, if you're offended by that sort of stuff, maybe just stick to the regular Hospital Ball episodes. I'll voice over between each one so you know exactly who's speaking and who the event was. The sound quality is a bit varied because obviously it's a live event, but hopefully you will enjoy them. This is part one because it is actually quite a lot of content here. So part one is just the episodes from September to December 2024. It starts off with Paddy McLaughlin and then it goes into Rory Watson. They were the first ones that came down in September. And who better to start with than Paddy, who had a foot in both camps of 2012 and 2025. And who knows, that could be turn out to be two promotion winning campaigns. Let's hope so. So here is Paddy McLaughlin.
And I've seen quite a few people make comparisons with this team, or certainly the style it plays, with the side of 2012, because you're in a great position, great person to offer an opinion because you played in both. So can you see why people are making those comparisons?
The style of play, you know, ball and floor movement from back to front, it's so quick, sort of one and two touch football. I would say the 2012 team was maybe a wee bit more off the cuff. I don't think we tended to sort of work on patterns as much as, you know, the gaffer does now. It's all very, very detailed, very structured. He knows exactly what he wants and how to go about getting it. Whereas we were 2012, we were probably a wee bit more off the cuff. It was a case of going out there and playing and expressing ourselves. But I think that was just the game back then. I don't really think I think coaching has moved on, and so many more young coaches are, you know exact patterns of, you know, what they want and how to go about it.
And you've played for a number of managers in your career, so just give us a further insight into what Adam is like as a manager. How is he different to the other ones that you've played for?
He's the most detailed in terms of the patterns that I'm talking about. It's very structured. I know, it does stuff on the tactics board, stuff on the video, and, you know, obviously stuff on the grass. And he's putting people in almost like they, you know, obviously never come across any or seen firsthand anything that Pep has done. But what people would say about Pep of being like, you know, you must be in this position, you must be in this position, there's an element of that to it. So it's not by chance. Everything's very methodical and very thought out, and it's delivered very well on a daily basis.
And I listened back to the podcast interview we did a couple of years ago, and you mentioned at the time that John Challoner had said to you, oh, you're really lucky to win at Wembley so young. And now, you know, because he had to wait his whole career for that, now you're kind of older than when he said that to you. How has it kind of, how has it been the older head in the dressing room?
What? Not the oldest, I will say. Yeah, although I get labelled as being the oldest. I might say a little bit, yeah.
Who is the oldest, someone?
But yes, it's a different perspective on things. I was the young lad, 20 years old, not caring to worry. And older head now, obviously seen a lot of things, been through a lot of things in my football career, and hopefully I can just pass on a bit of advice to people and keep driving standards on a daily basis, just to try and keep us competitive.
And one question I never asked you at the time, and something I've become a bit more fascinated with since I spoke to David McGurk, is superstitions in football. He mentioned about Mark Convery, who people remember playing for York years ago, had severe OCD and kind of he needed certain things in certain ways. I just wonder, you know, footballers generally are quite weird people, aren't they, at times, you know, with routines and stuff like that. Do you have anything that's been quite weird or other teammates you've had over your career?
Nothing that's stuck that's been like, you know, I've done it my whole career. But I think most footballers tend to do play well, or you're playing well. There'd be something, whether you, I don't know, put your left sock on for your right sock, or, I don't know, shin pads on before the warm-up. But, you know, there'd be something that you've done one week and you've played well and you've gone, you know what, I'm going to stick with that. Until you get thumped 5-0 and you go, nah, I'm changing that, I'm going to do something different. But I think most of us, a good 95%, are like that. There's the odd, I think I mentioned James Meredith to you, going back to 2012, where he didn't know what the hell week it was. He didn't know who you were playing on Saturday, honestly. But that worked for him. You'd walk out, he used to walk out the tunnel behind me, in the line, and he'd tap me on the shoulder and go, "Who are you playing today, man?"
Well, you're like, "We're at Wembley, mate. We're here next week as well."
And then he'd go, "Where are these in the league?" And you go, "It's tough game then." I said, 19th, he'd go, "Just shit them, I'll sort these out, no problem." So it was like, I'd put that word for him and that was him, but I'd say he's an exception to the rule. I think most lads tend to have little routines of basic stuff, what time they eat, what they eat, what boots they wear, a way of feeling comfortable, I suppose.
And it feels like, so yesterday you signed the Oxford first time around. How much has football changed? I'm making you sound really old again, I'm sorry. He's the second eldest in the Oxford squad, mate, I'll clear. So what has changed in football since you started out as a youngster at Newcastle?
I think data on all fronts, data would be the biggest thing, whether that be sort of performance analysis, video stuff, or the sports science stuff. In Newcastle 2011, and we were just getting, at Newcastle, that was Premier League at the time, we were just getting GPS coming in to like analyse the training loads and stuff like that, and we were just getting that last season, we were just getting like detailed sort of analysis on the games in terms of like pass completion and how many times passed it forward, saving, all that kind of stuff. And then when I came to York, it was like there was nothing like that in it. But we were dropping down 5 leagues out, but there was no sports scientist, there was no like video analysis. You turned up at half time, kicked a few balls around, and then started training at 11 and then got in your car and went home. Went to Rocco, like I said, for coffee and a sandwich or whatever. But over the years, that's what that'd be, 13 years. Since I first came to York, it's filtered down the levels. Whereas now we're doing prehab before training. There's a gym on site at the training ground. There's video meetings every morning to go through what the session looks like and what the previous game has looked like. And yeah, it's just become a whole lot more professional at this level. And I think that's only going to keep going. The more this league gets professional.
Yeah, and you got a new 2-year contract in the summer, which I think shows how much Adam sort of values you in the squad. And they say you should play for as long as possible. I mean, I know you're obviously really old, and but you obviously have that sports science role and Steve Watson, and you've done some of your coaching badges in the summer. So are you kind of actively now thinking about that next stage, or are you just kind of playing as long as you can?
I think anybody at my age would be daft not to have half an eye on what comes next. But I'm also conscious of not being in a rush to sort of finish playing. I don't want to get 3 or 4 years down the line and go, "I took my eye off the ball too soon." And that role, the sports science role, was something that I sort of fell into by accident, really. Well, not by accident, but Steve had offered it to me. We were just coming out the back of COVID and he wanted to bring a sports scientist into the club, but we just didn't have the budget to do it at that time. He sort of said to me, like, as a way of doubling up, would I be interested in doing it as a way of sort of gaining experience, and sort of cut my teeth in that role. And I wasn't massively keen on it, to be totally honest with you, when he first said it. And then the more I thought about it, I thought, where else would I get the chance to, to get hands-on experience? And I enjoyed it probably for the first couple of years, but then it did become, at that stage, it was, just doing the warm-ups, the old gym session, if people wanted stuff, programs written or whatever. And it was quite easy to manage alongside playing. But after we got promoted, things started to become, again, more professional. You evolve, and it became, GPS, so it was staying behind after training, downloading the data, feeding that back to the management staff, rehab stuff. It just all, it was becoming where I would, to a stage where I was thinking, this is starting to encroach on me playing. And it was Neil Ardley that was like, but he was the first person to say, "You can't be doing this, like, it's not fair," basically. And I was happy enough at that stage. I was just about the time that you came in, and I remember you saying to me, like, "What are you doing, mate? Why are you doing this?"
Yeah.
But it was, I was happy to let it go when it got to that stage, because it was getting to the stage of, it was encroaching on me preparing myself for training.
Do you think it's something you would go back to, like having, playing and think, because that's a good 2-year experience, isn't it?
It is definitely something I'm still interested in, but I just don't think at the level that we're running the sports science department at the minute, I couldn't do that alongside playing football.
Of course, yeah.
And it needed somebody fresh to come in and do that as a full-time job. And we have, we had Paul Harmston come in, he's left now, and it's Ollie Parker. But somebody is doing a full-time job there,
yeah,
which I was trying to combine with also playing.
It's all consuming, I guess.
Yeah.
And if your career was to end tomorrow, obviously it won't, because I know you're the second eldest and you've still got loads of years left. What game and what goal for York City would you love to go back and relive again?
The game would probably be Boston in the Conference North playoff final. And that makes,
I thought you meant the one on Monday. I don't want to relive that. Sorry, carry on.
that might surprise a few people, because obviously your probably automatic reaction would be one of the 2012 Wembley games. Don't know whether it's just because it's 10 years fresher in my memory, but or whether it was because I was 10 years older and it meant a wee bit more because I wasn't just in the moment. But I think, yeah, probably the 22 game. Stars just seemed to align, didn't it, with, you know, obviously being at the new stadium, almost selling out, and managing to get a 2-0 win on the day. I think, yeah, that was a really, really good day.
And goal? Any favourite goal?
Favourite goal? Nobody will probably remember it, but the volley away at Darlington.
I remember it, yeah. You said you were knackered. And...
Yeah. Yeah, you're right, yeah. I missed it. I'd been out for a few weeks, and I think we had someone go down injured on Thursday. I trained on the Thursday for the first time in maybe, I don't know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it was. But someone go down injured on the Thursday in training, and Steve Watson texted me on the Saturday morning. I was like, you got enough to start? And I was like, yeah, I'll be all right. And it got, yeah, it was 90th minute. I was on the edge of the box from a corner. It came out, and I thought, I haven't got the energy to bring this down. So I just volleyed it, and it went to the top corner. So, yeah, that's probably, yeah.
Okay. So, but right, before we get into York City, I just wanted to touch upon your earlier career, really. I saw a team sheet I found on Twitter the other day from a Premier League game for Hull City against Southampton. You were on the bench, and the other subs that day were Harry Maguire and Andy Robertson. And I think you also got on the bench at Anfield as well. I mean, they must have been incredible experiences for someone so young at the time.
Yeah, I just couldn't really believe it. We had an older goalkeeper at the time, but obviously the manager decided to stick me on the bench, and it was a weird reason as well. Steve Harper, I don't know if you remember, Newcastle's keeper. He put a shower gel on his legs, and he went to bend down, and his back went literally before the game. Yeah, he was very stiff, and that's how he was
proper old.
He was older than Paddy, and that's saying something.
He's probably younger than
I am now. But yeah, the chance just came to be on the bench, and especially the first one at Anfield, that was a special day for me and my family. Yeah.
And are you sort of thinking, God, it really up that whoever the keeper was that day goes down injured, and when you get on, are you bricking it, or what's your emotions?
Oh shit, I'm so right, really bad. The Liverpool game was good, we drew 0-0, and everything went quite smoothly, and then the keeper actually went down injured against Southampton. And I remember warming up, and I could just see the rest of the youth team lads, and they were doing like shit things to me. They were like, and I was like, yeah, that is how I'm feeling. So I don't know if I'd have been ready, but you never know until you try. So.
Yeah, of course. And I also noticed that Ryan Fallowfield was at Hull City around the same time, and then you both played in one of my worst ever York City games when North Ferriby came and won 1-0 at Booth and Crescent. I just wondered what your memories were from that game. Try not to mention the goal scorer, if possible.
Yeah, I won't mention the goal scorer. Yeah, we were absolutely useless, and somehow managed to come to Booth and Crescent and win 1-0. Yeah, I managed to beat Paddy two times that year as well against Gateshead. But I just remember giving tricks and stick behind the goal, to be fair, because he was giving it to me after the game. And I've obviously gone to loads of games as a kid, and I know who he is. And yeah, I just remember like just celebrating in his face, really. I feel a bit bad now, but it is what it is. One game at Booth & Crescent, 1-0, I'll take it.
Fair enough. You went on to play a lot of games for Scunthorpe United as well, who were people probably thinking, oh yeah, Scunthorpe now National League North, but they were sort of established League One club at the time, weren't they? And you played a lot of games for them. I was going to say, was that a happy time in your career? But you were saying in the bar there that you got a lot of stick from some supporters when you were there.
Yeah, it was when I went to North Ferriby on loan from Hull, and then managed to get a 3.5-year deal at Scunthorpe, who were top of League One, I think, at the time by 10 points. So I thought I was going to a championship team, really. I thought that was going to happen. And I think we lost 10 in a row when I signed. But I was a back out on loan, so I didn't want to involve. But yeah, it was like the first couple of years were really, really happy memories. We had a really good team. Played with players like Ivan Toney, you've seen, play for England, and yeah, we were really good. And then the chairman just all of a sudden just pulled the plug on the club completely, stopped spending the money that he was spending, and yeah, you've seen the downfall of Scunthorpe and how sad it is. But yeah, it was a difficult last 2 years at Scunthorpe.
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions about Ivan Toney. So that kind of no-look penalty he did for England in the summer, did he do any of those pass you in training? Or?
Yeah, he's done a few pass me in training. Yeah. He's got so much confidence, even from when he was at Scunthorpe, you could see that his confidence was way beyond where he was playing at. And I think that's something that's took him to where he is today.
Saudi Arabia?
Yeah.
£800,000 per week, so
not bad.
Do you keep in touch with him?
I wish. No, we talk every now and then, but it's amazing to see him earning that sort of money.
Yeah. And you also had a spell at Wrexham as well, working alongside people like Ben Foster. And what was it like playing for that club, and I was going to say like the circus around that. I don't mean that in a derogatory way. I mean just kind of the media interest and everything.
Yeah, it was. Well, I didn't go to Wrexham to be involved in that. I went to Wrexham to play games and to hopefully like get them up into the league, and it never really happened. I went there as a number two and then ended up being a number three when Ben Foster came in. I just remember being fucking fuming, to be honest, when Ben Foster came in. And everyone was like, well, it's Ben Foster, and I was like, I don't really care, like I want to play games. But yeah, the club, I can't speak highly enough of it. I know Paddy says that I go on about it quite a lot, but it was one of the worst, best years of my life, so probably the worst footballing, but some of the best experiences that I've had in football. And obviously went to Vegas and that one too, but either, so.
I haven't got any questions about Vegas, but we can come on to that later on.
Have you heard a story about when he got on the paper?
I don't know if it was a page, it was just on the website that I saw on my sunbed the next day, with me talking to some ladies and had a pool party in Vegas, and my missus wasn't too happy. I didn't realise that a fourth choice keeper at Wrexham would get packed, but there we go.
Bloody hell, you were third choice a minute ago. On to York City then, I presume that was a kind of perfect move for you, being from the city, and like you said, you'd been to games growing up, arm round trigger and everything. Was that a good move for you at the time?
Yeah, it was. It literally just came out of the blue, really. I'd had enough of football. I'm honest to say it, I couldn't really find a club in that summer. And I remember saying to Ryan Fallowfield, I was like, I think I'm just going to probably pack it in, maybe go part-time and try and get a job somewhere. And then Mikey Morton, who was in charge, he messaged me that night and was like, come in and we'll have a chat and stuff like that. Never to sign, just to have a chat and see where my head's at. And then Stockdale got injured on Saturday, which is crazy really. And then he said, like, sack the chat, just bring your gloves and your boots, and then we'll see what we can sort out on Monday. And yeah, I've not looked back since really.
Yeah, and obviously you had sort of different spells in and out of the team last year, and you know, certainly under Neil Ardley, and then out again in a few games later. That must be quite mentally tough for a goalkeeper, having to prepare every week like you are going to play, but compared to like the other substitutes who've got a fairly good chance of coming on, depending on how the game goes, you're kind of waiting on someone getting injured, aren't you, really?
It's a tough position. Look, only one player can play. It's a bit different this year because the gaffer is doing things differently, and I think he's probably going to see a lot more rotation between me and Harrison. I know it's not been the case like early on in the season, but that's what the gaffer wants to do. But yeah, especially under Neil Ardley, it was tough. I don't think I was his sort of player, and that's fair enough, that happens, but I suppose you just have to work as hard as you can, and when your chance comes, take it. And I think I did that towards the end of last year.
Yeah, definitely. And that chance came, I think, the Aldershot game, wasn't it, after the Altrincham 6-1 defeat, and you kept a clean sheet in that game. I felt like that was win or bust for you. I know like it might not have been with the points and everything, but did you feel pressure on yourself that day? Did you as players feel pressure back then?
Yeah, we definitely did, especially because the gaffer had come in and he'd really tried to get across his points, and everyone was sort of buying into it, and everyone sort of liked him from the start, but things weren't going right, and obviously the altering of him was terrible for the club. But to come back to win that game at Aldershot, it was definitely a massive like turning point in our season, and obviously we went on to beat Bromley and Chesterfield as well. So
yeah, and the Bromley game, you know, you made some unbelievable saves that day. I mean, everyone in here will agree with that, and I think that was your best game for York. I mean, you must have felt like you played a massive part in that survival come the summer.
Yeah, I was really happy to have played some sort of part in keeping us up. I know it was just a small part, but yeah, and people don't see the work that goes in behind the scenes, not playing for 30 odd games and then all of a sudden getting a chance. But I've never missed a training session, I've never sacked it off. I've always tried my hardest in training every day, and I think that's why that happens. It's because you do things right and you do things properly, and you want the team to succeed over your own benefits.
And you mentioned earlier about sort of rotation of the goalkeepers, and Harrison Mayle had started the first three games when you're in. How far in advance then did you know that you were playing at Sutton?
Well, the gaffer sort of said to me that I got concussion against Spennymoor, which was a nightmare, and he sort of said that I was going to play Southend and Sutton. So obviously Harrison ended up playing the first three, and then he said the week before that I'd play against Sutton. But yeah, that's just how it's been really off the cuff. It's like, you're playing one week, you're playing the next. That's how he wants to do it.
When's your next game then?
I don't know. But we'll see. Hopefully he sticks to his word, because that's what he said to me from the start of the year. So, but I will say that Harrison's done really well since he's come in. think he's been brilliant. He's obviously kept a lot of clean sheets, and especially the Boston game, I thought it was outstanding. So.
Yeah, and this idea of this sort of goalkeepers union, is that like an actual thing, or is that kind of like a...
Yeah, it can be. I think this year definitely is. Obviously, George is still there as well. I love George, I think he's a great keeper. Obviously, his confidence just went, and it's been really sad to see in his performances, but he's still turning up day in, day out. People don't see it, but he's working really hard, and I'm hoping that he can sort of get out and maybe get some games somewhere on loan and go and get his confidence back. But yeah, the keepers union is really good this year, and I've been at other clubs where it's not as good, but us three working together as a group has been positive.
Was it good under Ben Foster when you were fifth choice goalkeeper?
Ben Foster, everyone sees him online. He's an incredible guy, and obviously his career speaks for itself, so to learn off someone like that was valuable, really.
Yeah, and a couple of other things I noticed from researching your career and going back through your social media, which sounds really weird. And
I don't like where this is going.
Well, first one's quite positive, really. Song initiations, you seem to have a bit, like, talking about confidence, you seem to have a lot of videos online of you, like, at each club.
Well, singing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something that's probably been more... I'm probably more famous for singing than I am golfing, to be honest. But yeah, I obviously had the one at Hull that went massive at the time, and then yeah, just had to do initiations ever since. So
you're not fazed by it anymore?
Yeah, I am a little bit, because
it's hard being coached.
Yeah, I won't just say I'm not a performing monkey. I won't just sing at any random.
You pointed at Paddy when you said that.
Yeah, tenors in, and then maybe. But
the other thing was some random tweets you sent, which I thought were absolutely hilarious. You just put one time, this is nothing to do with football, by the way, just said, people who change their profile picture to the same picture for likes, #, dickheads.
Oh,
it's true, to be fair.
Where are we going here?
And you did some commentary for us last season on All Sport Radio and National League TV as well. And I think you were doing some sort of media qualification when we were chatting at the time. Is that a plan for sort of post-football?
I'm not too sure. I think it's something that I'd like to go into. I haven't really delved like too much into it. I've worked with the club's media department and obviously came and did the commentary. And yeah, I've done my degree in sports media, broadcast and journalism. So I'm hopefully graduating this year.
Jermaine Jenis.
Hopefully not.
Steady game.
Paddy and Rory, everyone.
So when it came to October's Trust event, unfortunately, due to work commitments, I wasn't able to host that event. It was the only one over the year I wasn't able to do. But thankfully, Jim Calverley stepped in. It was a guest were Callum Howe and Ryan Fallowfield, though Dan Batty suddenly turned up on the night. So he was an extra guest, which made it a fabulous night, having three players from the current squad. So here is Jim Calverley from the Supporters Trust, starting off interviewing the captain, Callum Howe.
Started at Scunthorpe and spent quite a bit of time on loan.
Yeah.
On loan. Seven clubs early in your career. How did that shape you as a player?
I came through the academy at Scunthorpe. I signed when I was 14. I was in grassroots until I was 14. And then did my youth team contract there. Signed 2 years professional. But I thought it was important when I was younger to get games, because I feel like you can't replicate games in training. I feel like when you're younger, especially as a centre half, you find opportunities limited. So I felt like going and getting first team football was going to be good for my CV. Mm-hmm.
And at Gateshead, you played under a bit of a York City legend, but also a legend of, let's say, the pubs around here as well.
Yeah, Gary Mills.
Gary Mills. Good old Gary Mills. Yeah. Have you got any stories about working with Gary Mills at all?
Yeah, I have actually. My first, my debut, we was away at Forest Green. I was obviously 17, 18 at the time. And we travelled down to a pub near where he was originally from, I think. And we got there and all the lads were at the bar ordering beers. And I'm thinking, like, I've never seen this before. And he goes to me, what are you having? I said, oh, I'll just have a water. He said, you'll have a pint or you won't be playing tomorrow.
That was that.
I had a Guinness and then scored the next day, so I probably should have carried on.
Very good. Well, hey, his methods worked here, let's put it that way. Going on to another York City manager that you played for elsewhere, you played for Ardley at Solihull as well. How was it when he arrived at York? Was that different to playing under managers you never worked for before?
pretty similar, to be fair. Obviously, I knew him pretty well. So he did call me when he first knew he was coming in. Mm-hmm. Had the conversation and obviously asked about the place and players and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. You were complimentary about these two?
Probably not these two, but yeah. A few of the lads, yeah.
How was it working for three managers last year?
Difficult. It is mm-hmm. difficult when you have change. You know, there's uncertainty when a new manager comes in. You feel like you've got to prove yourself again. Mm-hmm. You know, anyone would be lying if they didn't say when a manager comes in, you start questioning whether you're going to be in his plans, mm-hmm. etc. So, yeah, it's difficult, but you know, that's part of football. It happens a lot, so you have to get used to it and just keep proving yourself.
Yeah, and you've kind of come out of the blocks pretty strong this season as our lead centre half. I think you're the only one that's been there for the whole time. But at the beginning, at the end of last season, sorry, you must have been pulled into him at some point and told we're going to put Ryan next to you. How was that as a different partnership at centre half?
Yeah, I remember that day. It was Spudge, wasn't he?
Will Smith.
Yeah. He had something with his family overnight. I think there was a robbery at his mum and dad's and they was away, so he was dealing with that. And I remember Fowles going out the change room and he comes back in 5 minutes later. He goes, I'm playing centre half for you, mate. You're going to have to talk me through this.
This was just after the drubbing.
It worked all right.
Confidence was low.
Yeah.
Got told I was playing centre half. Never played there before.
We had a bit of a laugh about it before the game, but like you say, he was brilliant and he's done really well there since. Yeah. So worked well.
You talked about talking him through the game. I mean, we can hear most of that in the South Stand, but you have had a number of different partners this year and a number of different fullbacks outside you. But you seem to be a very commanding presence in there. Are you aware of those leadership qualities that we see?
I do like to think of myself as a bit of a leader. I feel like it helps my own game as well when I'm talking and organising, because you know, people say as a centre half, if you're organising, it makes your game easier. So
yeah,
try and do as much of that as I can.
Yeah. And how does it feel being around a squad that's currently second in the league at the minute?
Yeah, it's good. There's a good feeling about the place. It's been a positive start. You know, we're not getting carried away. We know we're only 12 games in, but it's a lot better than last season's start, and we just got to keep building on that.
Yeah. The other thing you've got involved in this year is the charity partners. You and Ryan are both the Wilf Ward representatives. Talk me through what that's like getting out into the community and especially working with Wilf Ward.
Yeah, it's good. It's always good to give back to the community, you know. As players, at some clubs, you don't really get to meet the fans like tonight. And, it's a bit more behind the scenes. But this year especially has been very open. All the lads have been going out, doing things around the community. And, you know, if we're all closer together, pushing the club in the right direction, then that's the main thing.
Yeah. Great. Superb. Thank you very much for answering my questions.
Nice,
that's your questions over. I'll let you pass me on to Ryan. Ryan, when I walked in here tonight and sat down outside, Michael pulled me aside and went, Ryan Fallowfield, the pride of Ghoul.
There's not much pride in Ghoul.
Unsurprisingly, that's the exact joke he made as well. Yeah. You have had quite the record playing against York with three wins with us against Harrogate and once with North Ferriby.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Reece Thompson.
Yeah, well,
not a fan favourite.
No, not a fan favourite. When you turned up, how much of that sort of playing against us made you aware of what was going on at York?
No, I mean, like, obviously, when I first signed, I knew how big of a club York was. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, when I've played before and we've won and stuff like that, like at previous clubs, it's about what I do now when I'm at York mm-hmm. and what I can achieve while I'm at York, but yeah, that's really it.
Yeah, and at Harrogate, you had two promotions,
yeah,
and an FA Trophy.
Yeah.
How? First of all, what's it like getting promoted out of this league?
I mean, as a player, that's what you aim to do. You want to be promoted. There's no better feeling than obviously being promoted. Obviously, it was to the Football League. Mm-hmm. I'd never played in Football League before, so
yeah, come in.
So, yeah, so it was... So, yeah, it was a great achievement. Sorry, what was the question again?
So what's it like? What's it feel like getting promoted?
No, it's a great achievement. Obviously, I know Harrogate are a local rival to York and things like that.
Yeah, we'll come on to that.
But yeah, it was a big thing for Harrogate at the time. A lot of years, obviously, being in the Conference North and stuff like that, and I felt like we did deserve to be promoted that year. I thought we'd done really well. Obviously, cut short by COVID, but we was in a good place. But yeah, in terms of the achievement itself, it was brilliant and one that I enjoyed.
And then, how does this team compare to the promotion team?
This current team. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some good players in this team now. Mm-hmm. I've been here, this is my third season now, and this is the strongest, you obviously all know that now anyway, mm-hmm. but this is the strongest team I've been in. In terms of comparing it to the Harrogate team, it's hard to compare right now because there's only been 12 games into the season. Mm-hmm. If it comes to the end of the season, we've been promoted, then it's a different conversation.
Mm-hmm. So you did go to Wembley with Harrogate.
Yeah.
Obviously, record crowd for them of zero.
Zero.
what was it like playing? What's it like playing at Wembley, first of all? It's got to be pretty much everybody's dream, right?
If I'm being honest, the first time we played there, you couldn't really embrace the occasion because mm-hmm. of what was at stake.
Yeah.
I do think it helped us on the day because, like you just said, fans of zero, we'd have probably got 2.5, maybe 3 there.
100, good.
Yeah, that's what, exactly. whereas Notts County would have brought 20, 30,000. Mm-hmm. So I think on the day, with no fans, as a club helped us get promoted. Mm-hmm. I think on that day, I don't think anyone would have beaten us on that day. We went through the playoffs and the way we was playing in the season, I just don't think we'd have got beaten that day.
Fans
can help, though.
I would like to think so.
Yeah.
You hear that quite a lot from footballers, that you just don't think you could have got beaten. What is it that goes into making you feel like that?
It's just in the changing room before. Like, I just look, you know, when you look at everybody, I seen how we played in the playoff semi-final. We'd not had a warm-up. I know, like, Halifax at the time and Boreham Wood, they'd all had, like, these warm-up games. Mm-hmm. And before, we didn't even have enough players to play 11v11 before we'd even played Boreham Wood, which obviously they beat Halifax in the game previous. So they'd already had a game before we'd even kicked a ball properly. So we was going into that a bit unsure of where we were, like fitness levels and things like that. And I remember half an hour into the game, and we were steamrolling them, like just outrunning them everywhere. And then you get a sense in that first 30 minutes, like, we're up to speed here. And we was just on it from, like, the first minute. And we took it in. Obviously, we won that game 1-0. And there was rumours of, like, when we played Notts in the final, that they rocked up on the day. You know, we'd stayed overnight the night before. I felt like we was well prepared. And it was actually Neil Hardley who was in charge. And they rocked up on the day, and I just... a little bit big time, do you know what I mean? Like, oh, we're gonna come here, we're gonna win, we're a bigger club. I just didn't get this, like, from my point of view, the sense that I was getting in our dressing room was that now there's only one team winning, and that was us.
Great. I mean, you did, which is always positive. When you play at home, especially at home, but it happens quite a lot away, there is quite a intricate chant about you nowadays. It's not quite the Russell Penn one, I'll be honest. I don't know whether you've ever heard
that. I haven't heard that one.
We'll tell you about it afterwards. It's fascinating. It's basically different kind of pens. But you've got an intricate chant yourself. What's that like? It's got to be pretty special, right?
I first heard it at Rochdale, and I remember, I don't know who I said it to, but I came out, I think it was at half time. And was it you?
I think so.
And I come out and I went, have you heard that chant about me? And after the game, I was like, I don't know if someone tagged me in it on Twitter or something like that. So I was at home trying to catch the song. Do you know, like, what it is in the background? So then I actually heard it out loud, and I thought, it's quite catchy, that, isn't it? I've never had a chant like that. But yeah, no, it is a good, it's a good song. Yeah. So I have sang it a few times, and I miss it all.
Don't tell us what room. That's
no.
So you've also been here the longest out of three of you. Juve before and after the Ugglers. What's it like? What's the difference in having that?
I would say the culture. Mm-hmm. Before, I mean, under John, John was good. John was quite hard. He knew how to get the best out of the players. At the time that we had when we were first in the National League, obviously, chairman at the time, which I can't assume many people are quite fond of.
No comment.
But yeah, he had his own ways about going about things, and he got rid of John. And I remember we had various meetings amongst players and the chairman at the time. It just didn't go down well whatsoever. I thought getting rid of John was a big mistake. I mean, the next one after that was an absolute... I don't know how to describe it, but David Webb, it just weren't great at all.
You mean World Cup qualifying David Webb wasn't good at his job? That's a surprise.
Well, I mean, how many games? Was it 6 games? And yeah. Speaks volumes. So.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, and then it was after that. Mikey came in and he kept us up, but he had a bit more, like, how do I describe it? He was more, how do I describe it? He knew players. Do you know, he knew how to get the best out of certain people and what was going to work to keep us up. It was tough, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, we managed to stay up last game. I know it was last game, but it was almost over before the last game at Notts. And then, so that was that season. Who was after that? It was Mikey again, wasn't it?
No, Mikey at the beginning of last season.
And then Neil Adam came in. Yeah. I mean, last season was tough. There was obviously a lot of players come in, mm-hmm. a lot of players come out and things like that. Cal touched on it earlier, like, you've always got to keep proving to new managers every single time. But again, I just felt like there was a bit of a bad culture around the place. And then obviously the gaffer came in at the end of this last season, sorry, and just obviously it's gone all right, like, it's gone well mm-hmm. since he's come in, and players have come again, players have gone, but I think this time around we've brought players in that are improving the team and the right characters and the right type of people that can take us forward.
It feels like Adam's got more of an identity. There's more of a way of playing, certainly yeah. patterns of play are more consistent. How did that help when he said to you, will you go and play at centre half?
Not on the date, didn't he?
You've done it a few times since.
I know Cal's touched on it about about me that when we had a conversation, but I do remember me and Cal was driving in that day, and obviously, like you say, going back to the Altrincham game again, and I mean, confidence was low. Like, it's going to be after a 6-1, mm-hmm. and we drove in, and then I mean, the least I was expecting was to be playing centre half. I didn't think I was going to play at all, you know, after we'd been tucked in 6-1, and then he pulled me in and he just said, look, something's happened with Will. You're the only player that I can kind of trust going into the centre half. When I came in and told him, I mean, I was a bag of nerves, I'll be honest, when I walked back in, because I'd literally never played there. Not in a two. I'd played in a three. And we played Barnet at home, we got beat 4-2. Played Ebbsfleet away and got beat 4-1. So it wasn't looking good, was it? But that was in a three. So then this time I was in a, just me and Cal. But if there's one thing that I can say is that I trust him. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to think he trusts me, so we know each other quite well. No, but we know each other quite well. So again, we were just constantly talking to each other throughout the game. And then, I mean, obviously we won 1-0, and Lenny the Saviour again, he scores, doesn't he? But then the week after we play Bromley away, he's ill, and I'm thinking, you've just got me through that game. I don't need to be ill this weekend. But yeah, and then I ended up staying there.
Yeah.
For a few games.
Yeah, yeah. And you've done it. You played this season at centre half haven't you?
Yeah.
A bit more comfortable now, less nerves?
Yeah, yeah. Well, after we played Aldershot, where I was getting in car, I went, I'm done at right back. I quite enjoy that. And then obviously we won a few games and stuff, mm-hmm. and then But then I said, it's easy for me to say that I enjoy playing centre-back because we're winning games. But when if you start losing games, then it's almost like, oh, maybe get me back at right-back. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I've only got one final question. Mm-hmm. And there aren't many of them, so it might be a bit unfair. Who's got the better fans, York or Harrogate?
Come on. No, Harrogate didn't have a chant like that.
That's gone. Thank you very much. Yeah, pass me on to Dan, if that's all right. So I have warned Dan. I spent about 10 minutes on his Wikipedia page because I didn't know he was coming tonight. But I'm going to go back. Well, first of all, we'll not mention the youth team days because we don't mention them. Oh, they play in white and we don't mention them.
Best team.
Terrible stuff. But when you kind of started, we were at Fleetwood, a couple of teams in, you played under Scott Brown. Now, he's got a bit of a reputation as a midfielder. What was it like learning from him?
Very different to what I'm used to.
Could you understand him, first of all?
It took me time, yeah. I eventually got there with him. But no, he's very different to what I was used to saying growing up, playing where I've played before that. He was a lot more direct in his ways and wanted quick attacking football, whereas, I don't know if you watch, I'd like to settle the game down and then build slowly. So it was kind of different for me to play under him there.
Mm-hmm. And you were in and out of the squad a bit last season. There's not a lot on your Wikipedia page, so we're into York stuff already. You were in and out of the squad last season. Was that tough? I mean, you were in and out of injury, right? So it was reason sort of thing.
I mean, yeah, like when I first went to Fleetwood, obviously a few managers came and went before he came. So everybody has a different style. He brought some of his own players in that he wanted to bring in as well. So it's just football. Like you said, you've got to prove yourself to each manager. And we had, I'd say, different ways of playing. Mm-hmm. So I thought I didn't really fit in there under his gameplay. So
yeah,
that's about it, really. Mm-hmm. So I missed out on quite a few games there just because I feel like I was a complete different player to what he wanted.
Yeah. And when it came around to coming to York, if we look down, I mean, you were at Hull, then Halifax, then Fleetwood. They're sort of a bit further up than we are, generally. But you came to York. What was that decision? What went into that decision?
Quite a lot of things, really. I was a free agent, so I was just waiting to see what would happen and what offers I got and stuff like that. So it was just a time thing, really. And obviously, I'd just had a little boy, and it made more sense for me to stay at home as well. And York's quite close to where I am, so that helped me make the decision to come here as well.
Yeah. And how have you found time in York?
I love it, to be honest.
Enjoying it?
Yeah, I mean, back when I first arrived, we wasn't doing great. And obviously, last season was a struggle. But this year, I think we've really developed as a team.
You can say it, because last season was not the worst season we've had, to be fair.
It wasn't. So, I didn't think it could get any worse.
Yeah. Oh, it can. Don't worry. Yeah, yeah. We spent 5 years in National League.
Yeah,
it was
pretty brutal last year, I'm not going to lie. It was, when I first turned up, it was a bit all over the place. It was a bit of a shambles, really.
Mm-hmm.
So that needed sorting out. And once it got sorted out, like this year, everything's settled down and I feel like we've got a good bunch of lads. And we've, like you said, we've started the season off well.
Yeah. And you, similar to these guys, you played under Morton, Ardley and Hinchelwood.
One game, Morton.
One game under Morton. Lucky you.
I turned up on the Friday.
Yeah.
Played on the Saturday. He was gone on the Sunday.
Well, thanks. I don't know.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah. But certainly under Ardley and Hinchelwood, you've had slightly different roles in midfield, like different expectations. What's that like as a player? And how much do you prefer? Do you prefer Hinchelwood, I guess? But I'm assuming you do.
Well, when Hinch has obviously come, he's more my style of play. He wants us to get on the ball, keep it moving. And for me, it's a dream, really. So I couldn't have asked for a better style for me to play in. And I think that's where I fit in and play my best football.
Yeah.
Under Ardley, like I said, he came in with a tough job to do. I feel like we had to do certain roles to get through it, and that's what we did. But as soon as Hinch came in, he put his style of play on it. And I thought, right, I feel happy and a bit more ready to go under that style of play.
Superb. And then One final thing, and this, I don't know whether you're aware, but for all of us, this is a career highlight. If I take you back to October of last year, we're in Dagenham's half, and we get a free kick in the 98th minute. What is going through your head at that moment?
We're in a good position here, aren't we? I knew that we were just killing time off at the end, but I actually didn't mean to kick it out of play, like over the stand. I meant to kick it out of play, but not over the stand. So I'm thinking, if this goes anywhere and stays in the pitch, or they manage to get the ball back quickly.
You didn't stay in the car park.
I was like, so I just hit it as high and as far as I could. And I went, what have I just done? Like, but no, it slowed the game down, so I was happy.
Yeah. I mean, I think we can all agree we loved it. Yeah. So we're here for it. If you do get a free kick in the 98th minute and we win again,
I got to do it.
Crack on. And if you can clear the East Stand, I'm with you. Yeah. Thanks so much, gents. We'll leave it there for the formal questions. Superb. Thanks very much.
So we're now on to November, and this was Ollie Pearce and Harrison Mayle, two players who have had a real massive impact on the team throughout the season. Obviously, in context, in November time, this wasn't long after the Halifax win, so there was a lot of discussion about that. But yeah, speaking to Ollie about the differences between National League South and National League, and Harrison talking about his early career with Marcelo Bielsa and Mark White at Dawkins. So it was a real, fantastic evening, and I hope you enjoy it.
I feel as a Yorkshire supporter, I've seen so many top goalkeepers over the years, and I was thinking, from Dean Carley, who played with Ian, Alan, Super Alan Fettis, Nick Pope wasn't bad either. And I feel like early indications are we might be adding to that list with our next guest. So please welcome Harrison Mayle. So, my first question is, how did you become a goalkeeper? So I always think when I was growing up, the weirdos kind of went in goal. The ones that were slightly unhinged. So how did you become a goalkeeper?
It was weird, really. I went to Leeds as a youngster, outfield. And then one game our keeper didn't turn up. Who wants to go in there? How the idiot who put his hand up? Rest is history.
Fair enough, that's pretty easy. You grew up in Bridlington, I think, is that right? Yeah, signed for Leeds, played for Tad, been at Gateshead, Worthing, that's quite a journey. How did you end up playing for Adam at Worthing in the first place?
Yeah, it was a weird one, really. When I was at Leeds, towards the back end of my contracts, I got quite a serious injury and went down to the PFA again. They have an injury program, and at the time the Worthing skipper was there, and they always say never burn bridges in football. And when I left Leeds, funnily enough, I didn't have any club to go to. Dropped him a message, any chance I could come down. He said, yeah, come down. And luckily Hinch was the gaffer and he liked me.
Right, so, yeah. That's mad, isn't it?
Crazy
really?
One.
You could have been there with anyone, couldn't you?
Yeah, well, honestly, I didn't have a club. I went to...
Did you know where Worthing was when you...
Yeah, I did.
I'm thinking, location-wise, from where you'd played.
I did do a little bit of research, and I knew, obviously, the year before I came, they were doing well, and then COVID hit them, so, yeah, I thought, why not? Got no else to lose.
And, I wanted to touch upon a couple of managers that you've played for during your career that are quite similar. Marcelo Bielsa and Mark White. So, just talk about those two. Like, I don't care how you do it. I'm just really interested.
I'd say they're like chalk and cheese, to be honest. But honestly, Mark White, brilliant guy. His heart's in Dawkins, he wants them to do well. And then Bielsa, he was a maniac, but he got the job done, didn't he, going back into the Prem. I've never seen someone so intense in my life. You wouldn't see him all morning, you'd step on the pitch, you'd be stood there, he's like a ghost. Final whistle or blow for training, he'll be gone, wouldn't speak to anyone, straight back into his office. Don't know what he did up there, but yeah. then you wouldn't see him at all around the club or anything.
Right, and in addition to that, how does Adam compare to the sort of other managers that you played for?
Nah, Hinch is top. One of the big reasons when I left Worthing to get back, when I seen obviously he was coming here, back up north, perfect move for me. I don't know, what's the word to put it? He's so clever with what he does, how he works with players, the tactical side of it, the personal side of it. You could go chat to him whenever, he's an open person. He'll tell you straight up what he thinks. But yeah, as you've seen, we're doing brilliant this season, and it's pretty much all down to him.
Yeah, and the players as well. I'm sure you can take some credit. I mean, there was maybe Ollie will when he comes up.
Yeah, he'll take it all.
There was quite a few kind of lazy comments, I think, when you signed about the kind of goals that Dorking had conceded last year. But I was looking, you absolutely swept up a Bear like Player of the Year awards sort of from fans and players who kind of nominated. Yeah. So whilst professionally, I'm sure it'll have been a tough season, was it kind of personally quite a good season? I know you got relegated, but kind of how you like developed and grown as a
yeah,
person?
Yeah, no, it was obviously a tough season. Fighting every week at the bottom of the table is not what you want, but me obviously still being young, I learned so much. I was around experienced pros who were coming to the back end of the career, like Tony Craig, he's been there with Millwall. Obviously just seeing the way he represents himself, the standards he sets. Obviously it's not the perfect season and not the way you want it to end, but I learned so much being young.
Yeah, and obviously you got a clean sheet at the LNER as well. Did you sort of have any thoughts that night, thinking obviously it'd be quite a nice place to play football?
Yeah, no, it's probably one of the best stadiums in the league. Obviously I've seen this year the fans, I've never played in front of anything like it. I'll never forget that Halifax game. Honestly,
my arm still hurts from
it. So do my knees from the inside.
Well, I had to go down the front because he came dressed as a lion. And I don't normally like to go to the front. I thought, oh, I've got, because he can only see about to that distance. And then all of a sudden, all these kids pack, some that I teach as well. But yeah, it was a special day. So signing for York, up north, size of a club, so it was obviously a really easy decision for you to make to come to sign.
Yeah,
for
yeah,
York.
No, of course. Obviously, I'm from Brid. I know about York. We, at Leeds, we used to play at Bivon Crescent, the under 21s, now and again. I knew the size of the club. It's a one club city. I knew if we go in the right direction, the fans are going to be there. And yeah, it's going to be brilliant.
And that was my next question about the fans. How much does that give you that extra kind of? Because obviously, none of us are professional football. How does it make a difference?
Yeah, it's massive. I know I said on the BBC commentary radio after the Halifax game, is we couldn't have played any worse for that 20-minute spell, but we stuck by it. And then once we got our first goal, seeing the fans, hearing the fans, it was going to happen, we were going to score our second. And you see it there at our home stadium, walking out, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, and that mentality, the switch obviously from last season, you'll have been in survival mode, to now being in that mentality that you, like you say, want, and I think those fans thought about Halifax, like, not played well, but once that first goal went in, everyone's like, oh, have we got enough time to get another chance here? And I think people thought that, you know, we weren't surprised, I don't think, leaving the ground having won. So how is that mentality for you as players, like expecting to win it? It must be completely different for you to last season.
Yeah, no, of course. It's obviously a lot of pressure on our shoulders, because when the fans are turning up, we have to play well, and not every week you can play the best. And that determines on the opposite team. Like we've seen early doors with Boston, they came with a game plan, they turned us over. But I feel that was one of the best things what could have happened to us, because in this league, anyone can turn you over if you're not 100% at it. But yeah, we took that as a learning curve, and we're not doing too bad now.
Pretty good, yeah. And I was sort of thinking, is it hard for, as a goalkeeper, you know, in this York City team, I don't know who, Morgan, you might be telling me, is it something like 70% possession York City have per game? I'll put you on the spot there, but it's something like that, isn't it? It's very high.
64, I think.
64.
Scary, I can say that off the top of my
head. He's rounding that down, I'm rounding it up. So 70%. So kind of like as a goalkeeper, whereas at Dorking, you're kind of probably expecting pressure quite a lot of the time because you're going as the underdogs. Is that like hard to keep your concentration because the players in front of you are keeping the ball so well, but like in a split second, you know?
Not really, no. Obviously, it's a different position to be in of... Maybe I might only have two actions, three actions a game. But I feel like when you're in a game, you're in a game. Right. If that's not making saves, I'll be speaking to my back four, telling them something. I don't know what, but just trying to keep myself in the game.
Yeah.
However that is, yeah.
Yeah, because the Ebbsfleet game was a good example of that, I felt, because there were times in that where I think you made two really good saves in that. I think Adam said that he felt you were man of the match. He didn't say it was Ollie. Yeah. It was you. But I thought that was because I got the point he was making, because if those goals had gone in, it would have sort of swung the game a little bit different. We might have just sort of settled for, you know, something less. Whereas when going on to win 4-0, that goal difference might make a massive difference at the end of the season.
Yeah, I'm just there to try and stop them, really. But like you said, the goal difference, it's a long season. Every goal does make a difference, especially when you get to the back end of the season. You see as well, like when we go away, a point is sometimes as good as three. When you get to the back end of the season, they all add up.
Yeah, and there's clearly a really close bond with the players, with the supporters. It must be just kind of a pleasure to kind of be part of this club at this minute, because everyone's so positive, aren't they?
Yeah, of course, and we have to, that's obviously from the results, we're playing brilliantly. The fans are turning up week in, week out for us. So if we can keep that going, that's going to keep being positive.
Yeah, we've got to get it up from 64%, haven't we? Let ourselves down. The rotation of goalkeepers, it was quite an unusual sort of thing. I think Rory said when he was at our meeting that it was kind of said before the start of the season, you were kind of both told that was where it was going to be. I feel like it's more cemented now that you play every week. Is that a hunch I've got, or is that kind of has nothing been changed?
I've not been told that. No. But it's different. It's the first time I've experienced it, but it's up to the gaffer at the end of the day. Yeah. I just turn up, and if I'm playing, I'm playing. If I'm not, then I'll support Rawls.
Yeah. And Rory sort of did talk about you and George as well. It sounds like you... cliche goalkeepers unit. Sounds like you have all got quite a good bond.
We all get along well. Unfortunately, George is injured at the moment, but it's not as if he's injured. Like, we're all together, the GK union. Yeah, stick together.
And then just the final questions. I'm sure everyone will ask you questions in after the break. But you played for England under 15, 17s, England C team as well. I just wonder what those experiences were like for you.
Yeah, no, they were brilliant. Played with some top quality players who have gone on to very big things,
such as
Jadon Sancho.
Yeah, he's all right. Yeah.
Matt Gay, Phil Foden.
Yeah, I've heard of him. Yeah.
Yeah, they're not doing too bad.
That wasn't an England C team, by the way. That was.
No, the standard of that training is like under 15s. I go there and go back to Leeds, go train first team, and think the standard's better at the under 15s England squad than it is at Leeds first team. What's mental, but it was the truth.
Yeah, you didn't tell Bales though.
No, he wasn't there at the time.
Just, you know, thank you for everything you've done this season. I think, like, the way that you're kind of so passionate with the fan base, it's so refreshing to see. We've had many years where there's been a real discord, I think, between players and supporters. So, you know, from me, thank you. And after the break, you'll get a chance to ask Harrison, your own question. So, Harrison, mail everyone. Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, so every promotion side needs a goal scorer. I think we all agree on that. So when you sign someone who's banged in 45 a previous season, it's fair to say we were a bit excited in the summer. So 9 League and Cup goals already this season. Just feel like you're just getting started as well. So Ollie Pearce, everyone. All right. So, I just thought I'd start with the game at Wickham on Saturday, because I was thinking it felt quite strange as a supporter to have lost a game. I know it sounds really weird, but was that the same for you as players, sort of thinking, oh, this is an unusual feeling sort of coming off the pitch?
Yeah, a little bit after the game, especially the last sort of 10, 15 minutes where we sort of had a right go. Just a bit gutting that we didn't get the equaliser.
Yeah, and I just wondered, who did you grow up supporting, and was there a striker who kind of influenced you in your sort of early career?
I'm a United fan, unfortunately. Man United, yeah, I'm but I used to love watching Thierry Henry.
Right.
Yeah, I used to watch videos of him all the time. He was a joker.
Yeah. And 245 appearances, 155 goals for Worthing. I think I've got that right. I don't know if you're the stats man or...
Right.
Yeah, okay, that's good. I mean, incredible record. You must hold that club. I mean, you know that I know Pete Bell quite well and speak so highly of you. I mean, when I speak to Pete, it feels like a real community club and kind of a real kind of close bond again with the fans and the players.
No, 100%. And that all sort of come from, I don't know if everyone watched the documentary recently on TNT, George Dow. Sort of since he took over, it all sort of come together as a real community club. One that was going in the right direction, and fingers crossed they make their way up the football pyramid.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like all the York fans sort of waving their arms like our second team now.
Worthing North.
Yeah. I think we feel sorry for them because we've nicked half the players. But with that goal record then, I know we spoke in the summer and you sort of said nothing concrete ever happened to you in terms of signing pro for someone and moving up the pyramid. But you did mention there were some opportunities. So how close were you to ever leaving Worthing?
It was more towards the end of last season, actually. I think it was the last sort of 15 games before the National League window shut. There were a few clubs interested, but nothing ever really come of that. They didn't really let me go. So
no. And was that kind of as soon as Adam came in? It was kind of, you know, a bit like Harrison sort of reuniting with someone that you're familiar with. Is that again tick a lot of boxes for you?
Yeah, it was funny actually because when that interest sort of started coming in, I actually tried to give Hinch a call before sort of another team got their first sort of thing.
Right.
But when he answered the phone, he said, I've got quite a lot of stuff going on at the moment, so I'll give you a call at the end of the season. Right. I think that was just after the Ulti game. So.
With good reason.
I said, no problem, I'll wait 6 weeks.
Yeah. I'm amazed you still worked to sign for something like this, to be honest. You didn't watch it. In terms of like adapting, you know, there's quite a lot for you to kind of contend. I was thinking, you know, the fact that York are full-time, Worthing were part-time, they kind of step up in levels, a bigger crowd, so fitness-wise and all that sort of stuff. How have you found that, you know, fans might have their own opinion, but how have you personally found the kind of step up?
I've enjoyed it, first of all. The first 2 weeks of pre-season, I thought, what am I doing here? My legs were in absolute bits. I thought, I can't do this. But you sort of, your body gets used to it. I mean, I've worked for the last 10 years, sort of 9-to-5 job, and gone to play football in the evening. So the first few weeks did hit me hard. When you're done at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you think, "What am I going to do for the rest of the day?" It was quite difficult, actually, difficult to get used to. But like you mentioned with H, we've got a real good group of lads. Everyone sort of come together, and it's actually a nice place, nice environment to be in.
Was it an easy transition, knowing that obviously some players like Marvin you'd played with before, and Harrison as well? So was that quite helpful?
Yeah, exactly that. There was six or seven lads that you already knew, so it was coming into a change room where you almost knew most of the squad already, and obviously Hinch, Gaz and Cam and Sam the physio as well were there, so it was like, it's just normal stepping into
Friends
the normal
United.
Exactly that, yeah.
And I mentioned on commentary of late that it kind of feels like you're in a real purple patch of kind of form, and I think the Barnet game epitomised that really. Once that ball went into your path, I think we had no doubts that was going to end up as a goal. Do you get like that as a player? Do you kind of know when you're in that kind of rich vein of form and you try things that, you know, without thinking almost?
Yeah, I think so. I think as well, I need, for a striker, I don't know how you felt personally, but a run of games as well, just to, especially in the league above that I've come into, just a run of games to get used to the sort of the tempo of it. I mean, the first game at Southend, I thought first half hour, this is the quickest game I've ever played in, and it is a big jump. But I feel like if you get a run of games and you start getting used to the players you're playing with, you start picking your positions a bit better and you find yourself in better opportunities to score. So it did take a little while, but hopefully now that purple patch can stay.
Yeah. for the rest of the season. how do kind of Conference South and Conference National defensive compare? What's the difference? You mentioned about tempo, but in terms of like defenders that you're up against, what's the difference?
They're built a bit bigger, aren't they? A bit quicker. I think obviously everyone's full time, everyone's fitter, everyone's a bit sharper, and I think you just got to be a bit smarter about your movement and where you put yourself in the box. You know, it is a big jump up, but feels like one that I can step up to. So
yeah, and out of the 9 goals that you've scored so far, what would be your favourite one that you've scored?
Halifax, last minute. I know it was only from 2 yards, but
it'll count.
You thought 2,000 fans are running onto you. It's a good feeling.
Or trampling on you.
Yeah.
Thanks to Steve. When we spoke in the summer, you said like it was an easy transition. Is there any difference sort of playing for Adam at York compared to playing for him at Worthing?
No, I still think his ideas are the same, but I think he's probably just got better footballers to sort of. His vision, if you know what I mean. You've got, you know, better players to sort of put out what he wants to see. So that's the only difference, I would say.
Yeah. And you said, going back again to the summer, that you didn't really have goal targets. That's not really something you've always ever done. But I presume that hasn't changed now. But do you kind of have a look at the top scorers' charts and think, oh, I'm only two behind him? Or
yeah.
Yeah.
Every week. <Good. laughs> But I don't set targets now.
No.
I'm just annoyed if I don't score.
So. Yes. So, kind of, as kind of Sanford York exceeded your expectations then, because I feel like, as fans, like we all kind of thought, oh, we'll take top 10 next season, you know, that would be good. And then I think after the first few games, we're like, oh, playoffs would be on here. And now it's getting a bit giddy. What is that? Do you feel like that with, as players, you think?
I don't think we feel giddy. I think we take it each game at a time, but we've got a manager that will push us to the limits. And, you know, I think there was a... There was a game yesterday just for some players that haven't got any minutes. I think they lost 3-0. And I know for a fact he would have been fuming at that, even if it's just a friendly game. His standards are so high and he won't let you drop below those standards and he will keep pushing us. So I know we're top of the league at the moment, but it's 16 games or 18 games, whatever it is. He'll keep pushing us higher and higher. And we've, as players, have started to buy into that as well. Obviously, we know what he's like. And I think some of the other players now are starting to sort of realise that as well.
Yeah. And in the summer, I think you just got the keys to your new place, I think, when we met, literally just given him. And how are you enjoying kind of the city of York and living here? And
yeah, it's lovely. It's a beautiful place. Me and my girlfriend have moved up here, so we're sort of wandering into town every afternoon, just checking out the place. It's a little bit busier than what I was used to. I was in the sticks down south. So yeah, it's a lovely place and we've settled in really well.
Yeah. And the crowd, obviously, it's a potential to sell out on Saturday. I think we're all expecting it to sell out. That excites us as supporters. Do the players have the same sort of conversation, sort of looking at how many tickets are sold and thinking that's going to be can't wait for Saturday?
100%. That's what we've been saying all week. Hopefully it'll be a sellout. You know, we want to play in front of big crowds. That's what you want to be a footballer for at the end of the day. So I know they've sold their 2,000. Hopefully we can, you know, pack it out and sell it out and make some noise.
Yeah. And same question that I asked Harrison really about playing for England C. What's your kind of experience of that? And
that was a strange experience, actually, because that was coming from the south to play. It's usually a National League team, isn't it? And that's the first time I sort of was away for a few days, and it was more of a full-time environment. So it was completely different for me. There were some players there that have obviously played in the league or established National League players, and it was actually a bit of an eye-opener, and I was like, this is something that, you know, I want to do full time, and that's what sort of pushed me towards the end of the season, going, I need to go full time. Want to go full time. So yeah, it was a great experience. I played half hour in the game, and it was a really enjoyable experience.
And what's the kind of treatment like from it? Is it like you treated like an England international? You get the cap and all that sort of stuff. Then
yeah, got the cap, got the shirt. Like I said, I think we were away for 2 or 3 days. I don't know how long you were away for. I think it was 2 or 3 days. Trained every day. You know, hotel, anything you want, kit, everything. Yeah. And it was a bit of an eye-opener for me because obviously I've never had that before. So, yeah, it's a great experience.
And the last question for me was kind of, you've obviously now gone full-time and you know, you've come into full-time a bit later in your career. Are you now looking and thinking, you know, can I make it to the Football League? Is that a big kind of thing for players to get in the Football League and have that kind of status?
I don't really think like that. I like I said, I just keep every game at a time, and you want to do as well as you can. We've obviously we're at Worthing where we wanted to do as well as we possibly can and get promoted, and that's the same here. You just want to do well for yourself, do well for your players and do well for the fans, and hopefully at the end of the season that comes as a reward.
Ollie Pearce are on.
Finally, for December, we finished off with a couple of people from the coaching staff, actually, rather than players. So Cam Morrison and Gary Elphick, the assistant manager, came down to Brew York, and it was a great evening. Real fascinating insight into the sort of things that they do behind the scenes. So whilst there weren't players, it was an equally fascinating evening. So I hope you enjoy listening to these.
So please give a big hand to Mr. Cam Morrison.
Yeah, so I just wanted you to start by telling us about your coaching journey, really. As you're only 28, I asked people for questions, and Graham said ask him when he starts shaving. But you've coached at Brighton and Worthing before coming with Adam, so just talk us through kind of your journey to get to York.
Talking on the shaving bit, I actually cut my finger about 20 minutes ago shaving, so...
It's supposed to be your face, not your finger.
Shave. Well, I tried to anyway, but I ended up cutting up my finger, so... Yeah, I didn't go very well. Yeah, in terms of sort of the career, was never good enough to play. There's no dodgy knee or injury or anything like that. It just wasn't very good enough. So I ended up going to college, then went to university in Chichester, done my degree there. And that's probably where it all sort of started in terms of the coaching aspect. Started coaching at Portsmouth Women, so that's sort of my first managerial sort of step. Managed them when I was 19. Left university and got a call from George Dow, who was the owner at Worthing, to sort of take over the women's side. So went in there, and at the time, Gary was the first team manager of the men's side. So this is where it probably gets all a little bit complicated, but that's where it all sort of started, where I went full time at Worthing. Done the women, and then worked with Gary with sort of the men's side. So done a couple of months there, and there was obviously change in management, and then Adam Hincher would come in as manager, and I sort of stayed on and worked under him. So done about a year or so with Adam, then went to Brighton full-time as an academy coach, started with like the real youngsters, was sort of the under-9s, under-10s, pretty much just tying up their shoelaces, was the extent of most of my coaching at that age group, and helping them put their bibs on. Then after that, worked my way up the age groups, and then ended up sort of working with the 15, 16s, under-18s at Brighton, still working with Adam, and then Gary as well at Worthing in sort of the final season. Sort of on the side as my full-time job at Brighton. I think the text from Adam was pack your suitcases, and I had a funny feeling that Adam wasn't going to take me on holiday, so I'd imagined I had a bit of an understanding of what that was going to entail. Obviously I'd probably had a look with interest before, and eventually I knew at some point that how talented he was, that an opportunity was going to arise. So yeah, I think he texted me going, pack your suitcases via WhatsApp, legged it upstairs, started to pack my suitcase, and I think 48 hours later, we ended up in York. Went to the stadium, and then ended up in the Mercure Hotel, and then the following day, I think we met about 50 players in this. It was probably the most nervous I think I've ever been. Walked in this room and going, flipping heck, about 50 players in this tight canteen at the training ground going, didn't realise you had a B team as well. Realised that they were all actually first team players.
Did any of them get the bibs on and stuff like you've experienced before? Or?
There is a few that do have a little paddy from time to time. The bottom lip goes, and not so much the shoelaces, but they tend to forget a lot of things. So that tends to be the case. I walked into that training ground going, flipping out, there's about 50 people here, and then realised that there was probably too many players. Probably took me too many weeks to remember everyone's name, because there's so many people, so many players. That's probably where we're up to about now, yeah.
Well, the second question was, how long did it take you to decide to come up with Adam? But clearly he just told you that you were going with him. There wasn't a sort of thought process for you to make, really.
No, I think I always sort of knew sort of eventually, obviously we were having a good season at Werven at the time, that he had had interest and had sort of offers beforehand. So I probably always knew at some point that something was going to come. And worked with him for so many years, I trust him so much, and sort of just, one, he's so intelligent in terms of his, like, his gut instinct as well. Like when he sort of said that, no, this is the time, then you go, well, yes, just follow him. And I think probably the best bit was where there was no time to think about it. It was so instinctive, and we were just in a car up here, and 48 hours later, it was all head down and got going, really. So yeah, I think probably, I don't know, probably an honest opinion, if we had given it any longer, don't think I would have come up here. Sort of looking at the, like, the league table and sort of everything like that, we'd probably go, this is one hell of a tough ask. So obviously we're doing okay at Werven as well. I generally thought if we'd have given that like a week's sort of thought process, in my opinion, being honest, I don't think I would have come up. But I'm so glad that it was such a sort of tight turnaround. You had no time to think. It was funny because the one of the chief operation officers at Brighton, he's a massive York fan, a guy called Chris Crowe. And we'd always used to talk about on a Monday morning, like the Werven result and then York's. And I would sort of like blank an eyelid because he was just talking about York and I hadn't given it too much thought. Because he'd always refer to, I don't know if it's a bad name, but Ollie Tanner. That was sort of how we sort of apologies but that's how it sort of started, really, because we played against Ollie Tanner a couple of times, and then he sort of asked me, Ollie Tanner's come to York, what's he like? And then that's sort of where I found out he was a big York fan. So every sort of Monday morning we'd always talk about York and Werven, the results, and it's weird that like a year later, and it was more just general chit chat, I didn't really take too much of interest. And it was just weird that like a year later, ended up here, and actually I probably knew quite a lot about York with sort of his passion that he sort of spoke about, and he loves it. He sort of still comes up here quite a lot. But probably how we sort of ended up here.
And I remember that first game against Wilson, you came to the top of the gantry where we were doing the commentating, and you were filming the game on a little camera and writing down notes. And I remember that when you weren't looking, I had a little cheeky look down at your notepad to see what you'd written. Do you remember what you wrote after half an hour?
Shit.
I've no idea, but it's probably not.
It just said goal in capital letters.
Oh, goal.
I think it was where we'd scored. It must have been for you to work out where it was on the thing. Probably, yeah. But I was expecting, oh, no, it's real cheeky. Goal. Nice one.
I think on sort of the video, like we put sort of key times in it, and for us to go back and review, and then we're able to show sort of clips at half times of players. So sort of tries to, the gaffer goes, oh, we need to work on this, this, and this. He sort of explains it visually, sort of explains it, and then hopefully I can provide a little bit more sort of visual for players in terms of being able to view that via the video on the big screen in the change room as well.
Because you were doing that in the first half, and then you disappeared the second half, and you were doing that every match the end of last season, but we haven't seen you this season. Is that because things have changed?
We've managed to get a head round the IT at York. So basically York bought a load of fancy kit, didn't know how to use it last year, and now we've been able to tweak it and get it working, really. So
what's the same with the players today?
It's basically like a camera that's installed into the ground, and the feed goes straight to the manager's office, and I watch it from in there, and I can go rewind bits and see if things are offside or if there's an injury, or if I want to watch sort of key moments back and then clip a few bits up, show them at half time, and then come back out for the second half. And
Because you are very young to be working in the game, and you mentioned that you'd not played at a particular level. Have you ever found that difficult or challenge, or anyone challenging you that you haven't played the game before, sort of thing?
I'd probably say I'm like a young sort of individual, but probably not so much in sort of coaching hours. I think especially like when I was at Brighton or Werber, I was coaching 7 days a week, doing 3 or 4 different sessions. So probably sort of young in terms of sort of age, and still got ID'd as well for a scratch card. So this is my attempt at growing a beard. It's not going very well. It takes me a while. But yeah, it's probably like young in terms of sort of age and stuff, but probably I'd like to think I'm had loads of different experiences. Sort of at Brighton and Worthing, sort of coaching 7 days a week, then 3-4 different sessions. So I think I've been able to sort of clock up a lot of coaching hours. But yeah, you do get a little bit of jip normally around my scoring. If I don't count the scores correctly, probably a bit like Tyree Sinclair today, who's moaning because my scoring or refereeing wasn't great. So
fair enough. The Altrincham game last week, we were all obviously naturally disappointed. Not as much as last season, I have to say. And Adam sort of took responsibility and you know, but I also know Adam talks about this stat that he said you came up with, that the more you kind of freshen it up, the more subs you make, the kind of, historically speaking with data, you do end up at the top of the table. So whilst kind of on reflection, maybe he might have kept the same team again, but not necessarily from a data point of view, that's not factually correct, is it?
No, there's a sort of a stat that sort of looked at, I think it's probably a few games before Altrincham, that the top four, so the top three teams have made the most amount of subs, where the bottom five teams have made the least amount of subs. So I think it was us at the time, York, Gateshead, Forest Green and Barnet had made the most amount of subs. And then I think it was Braintree, can't remember the last couple, had made the least amount. And I think that just sort of showed us that, and we sort of mentioned it right at the start of the season, that the best squad would win this league this year, in like our opinion. And I think that showed, especially with the rule changes this year around being able to make 5 out of the, is it 9 subs? 7 subs, yeah. You've been able to make 5 subs where, obviously in previous years, it's been 3 sort of substitutions. But that was giving us sort of the biggest edge, where the top teams had made the most substitutions. So we sort of looked at that and going, well, you're probably going to have the best squad in terms of the depth and quality. Freshness as well. So you'd probably look at the bottom teams, you go, and have they got that quality? Have they got the ability to have game changes on the bench and the quality that we sort of think that we possess? And then we also looked at the stat where we try and measure the impact of our subs that come on. So there's like some games we go, do you know what, the subs that come on haven't made an impact. And then where a lot of the time we go, okay, well, the subs that have come on, like numerically, they've made an impact in terms of our performance. So yeah, it's not a deciding factor of pure data dictates how we choose a team or choose how we play. It just tries to help us sort of inform our decision making. And that was just sort of one aspect that the top teams have made the most subs, and that probably indicates that the freshness in the side and less injuries and that sort of strength and depth, really.
Yeah. We obviously see you out there with the players doing drills sort of before games. What are the bits we don't see? You mentioned there about you're there with your cinema and watching the game in the first half. What sort of other stuff are you doing that we're not kind of privy to?
Sort of during the game or like...
Well, like just in general, are you going out watching games as well? I've heard someone say that you do that quite a lot.
Yeah, so probably sort of differs throughout the week. Sort of would analyse the game, sort of code the game up and get all the stats and send those clips to sort of players. And then sort of when it comes to Monday, sort of we review sort of the game. So that's the first thing we do on a Monday, sort of get the players in and go, this was some really good bits, this was pony. And just sort of give, again, sort of the players another sort of learning opportunity in terms of like how can we continuously sort of improve and develop. And that would be the same for staff as well, to go, do you know what, we've watched the game back and should have recognised that, could have done better there. So it's not just for the players to hammer them and go, flipping out, any danger of like livening up. Like it's a brilliant tool for us to learn and develop from, because like, we're still learning and we need to get better. So yeah, analysing the game. Then we'd sort of deliver sort of a lot of the training as well, sort of the training sessions. They're all filmed again, so we can sort of review them and for the players and for us. Try and watch a lot of the opposition as well, so we try and watch the last couple of games, just to get a bit of an understanding of sort of how they play. And but most teams just tend to twat it long, and they've got big two big forwards up top, so that tends just to be the case. That's probably it in terms of sort of the week. And then yeah, sort of a match day, obviously sort of warm-up stuff, try and sort of analyse and feedback some information during the game, sort of the first half, and then sort of that in the second half. And that sort of process and reflection process just sort of happens again, reviewing, delivering sort of training, what's a bit the opposition. It's probably definitely, we all sort of help with sort of the recruitment process as well, and that can sort of differ throughout the week, and that's just sort of a continuous cycle, sort of week in, week out.
And just last question from me was about Clint Donaldson coming in, helping the development of players. Is that someone that you're going to work quite closely with, Ben, given that you sort of coach in the role?
Yeah, so I think sort of Clayton's role, I think he's watching, sort of just grasping a little bit of how we're sort of operating, and he's watching a lot of the training sessions and games, and just so we can sort of get some sort of alignment. I think that's really important sort of the next couple of months, that when the sort of the development team comes in, there's some real alignment between sort of the first team and those players that are within that group. So we'll be sort of watching a lot of that, and I think everyone's just trying to work together to try and improve, really. So we'll be able to take some bits off him, he'll be able to take some bits of us, and we wouldn't say there's sort of any egos, we're just all ultimately trying to learn and develop and be better. So come 5 o'clock, there's a smile on our faces for half an hour, and we just enjoy those moments, have a good Saturday night, and go again the Sunday morning. I think that's what we're all sort of striving towards. I think there's no better feeling when that 5 o'clock comes and the referee blows his whistle, and you shake the fourth official's hand, even though he's told 100 times to keep inside his technical area. But you go, you walk around the ground and you go, like, how unbelievable the sort of the fan base. You sort of walk around, it's cool, and the atmosphere. And I think that's what you work sort of day in, day out for those moments, whether it's home or away, to hear the music after and the fans sort of singing. There's sort of no better sort of moment, that sort of 2-3 minutes, and see all the players as well in front just sort of clapping. And yeah, the atmosphere is, I've experienced nothing like it before. It's when that place is rocking, it's sort of unbelievable. And I think that's what we're all sort of striving for, to that only those couple of minutes where the whistle's gone, and you walk around and you go, wow, this is unbelievable, and this is what we moved sort of all this way up for those moments. Sort of once a week, twice a week, we play on a Tuesday, is for, really. So yeah, and just the atmosphere around the place is unbelievable. So
well, you're clearly putting a lot of hours in, and I think us York City supporters really appreciate it, and the turnaround's been remarkable. So thank you very much, Cameron Morrison, everyone. Please put your hands together for York City assistant manager Gary Elphie. So lots to discuss about York City, but I wanted to get a bit of a take on your playing career. You represented the likes of Brighton, Eastleigh, Eastbourne, St Albans, and of course Worthing. What sort of centre-half were you like? And I asked Adam the same question. Were you like any of the centre-halves that played for York? And he said Ryan Fallowfield. I don't know if he's been correct there.
Caramel, 100%. Yeah, used to be quite good in the air. Yeah, brave heart, but not the best with the ball at my feet, but yeah, put it in every game. Yeah.
Colin Howe. Yeah. Okay, we'll take that. Another club you played for was Havant Waterlooville, who were famous for their FA Cup game with Liverpool. And yeah. I think you were at the club at that time, but you were cup tied. That must have been absolutely good.
I was captain. Got signed for quite a bit of money, actually, from St Albans, and then played every league game, and then couldn't play in the FA Cup. So, yeah, I was there, but absolutely gutted.
That must have been so gut-wrenching.
Yeah, horrible.
And I didn't realise until researching for tonight that you actually replaced Adam as manager of Worthing. In fact, we were talking about it in the bar there after his first spell there. And you were kind of a joint manager as well. You don't see that so much these days, do you? So talk us through about how that happened. So Adam signed you, and 2 weeks later he...
I had a phone call off Adam, and he just said, look, Gaz, I'm going. I went, what? You only just signed me? And he went, I've got a full-time job at Brighton. I was only 29 at the time. He said, but I'll put you forward for the job. I was in a bit shocked, to be fair, at 29. You sort of, as a centre half, you come in your prime, and looking back on it, I probably had it a little bit too early, but I think we won the league actually. The following season, didn't go too well, but it's a great learning curve even at that age, you know, controlling your emotions and things like that. So, yeah, bit of a surprise at the time, but yeah, learned plenty from it.
And then I think you went on and managed at Hastings for a bit as well, didn't you?
I've been quite successful. Yeah, I've won a couple of leagues with Hastings. Obviously, won a league with Worthing. So, yeah. To be honest with you, me and Inch was sort of in competition a little bit as sort of top manager in the region, but he was always ahead of me. He's unbelievable, and I've just learned loads from him.
And when you came back as a coach under Inch at Worthing, was that quite strange, given it was a team that you'd already managed? Was that a weird dynamic?
It could have been, but to be honest with you, I've known Inch since we was coming up in Brighton together. Like we've been thick as thieves. We've always been sort of pally. And when he said that I'd come, it was a no-brainer for me to sort of educate myself as well. And as Cam's already touched on, you never stop learning in football. So yes, it was brilliant.
Yeah. And how does your partnership work? Is it kind of like a good cop, bad cop sort of relationship? I'm basing it on the Worthing documentary, by the way.
Inch is poker faced. He's got that funny little banter about him, Inch, where he can make people laugh. But even the staff, we've got a bit of a fear factor with him. You know, you've got to turn up every day and know that you've got to carry out your job correctly. I'm a little bit more banter, arm around the players if the chins drop, and I'm probably like a little bit of the chief motivator in the dressing room. It does work well.
Yeah, and how much of what you do in terms of tactics and shape, etc., is that done as a coaching team? Is that done as Adam's got an idea and you kind of like, he sort of delegates it to you? How does the dynamic work?
It's a democracy, really. We come in on a Friday, Adam will ask probably Cam to put his team up, me to put my team up, and he'll put his team up. Then we'll talk about the week we've had in training, any injuries. Obviously, S&C now is huge. Like when I was playing, you could come back from like a torn hamstring and you'd be playing three times a week straight away, whereas for instance, against Altrincham, we had to take Crooksy out because obviously he's had a history of injuries and things like that. So it comes into so much now, the S&C side. So that as well is a massive factor.
Okay. And you had great success together at Worthing. It was clearly a big decision for Adam to come here. Cameron was just told to come, I think. But in terms of sort of relocating your family and stuff like that, I understand you had your own plastering business as well. So was it a big decision for you, or were you almost like 100% always going to follow where Adam's going?
it's my dream job. Like, I jump out of bed every morning, I pinch myself, you know, I was in the building game and, you know, he's sort of covered in shit every day, struggling right on the phone, speaking to people, and I'd had enough actually, and I knew that the opportunity would come, and as soon as Inch gave me the phone call, I had the car engine ready,
And did you wonder what you'd done when the sick form went in at Altrincham, and were you sort of thinking, or at least, you know, this job is bigger than we first sort of thought?
I loved it. No, in a weird way, I thought, this is it, bring it on. Put every bit of shit towards you. I read things and bring it on. That's my mentality as a human being. Like, you know, it's a great learning curve, and it would be the best thing that's ever happened to us, because we ripped up the thing. We said, like, we're going to do it our way. And that's, like, I think that's what we're like as human beings. We're humble, hardworking, always willing to learn. It was the best thing that ever happened.
And Adam said that you all watched it back together. So I'm fascinated by suppose. When did you watch it? How soon after? Where did you watch it? Did you get the popcorn out? Did you pause it? What do you talk me through the whole thing?
We had a bottle of red wine. We got in at, I think it was 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. We watched the whole 90 minutes, and there was clearly players not up to it. And we just said, look, we're going to go down doing it our way. Let's rip up the whole thing and do it our way now. And as I say, had the lads in the following day, which was supposed to be their day off, took them through the whole first 45 minutes, wasn't it? Packed them on their way and said, that's it, you know, we start tomorrow. And then there was big calls that were made. But, you know, I still look at it now. I think we're 5 years ahead of schedule now, all because we've stayed up by that single goal. That just shows you how huge it was.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think when we went down to National League North first time around, it did literally take us 5 years.
Yeah.
That last game of the season at Solihull, you were obviously mic'd up, weren't you, because Adam was in the stand. That sort of thing happened before? I know you said he's only the four officials here, but is it?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I've got quite a loud voice, so each will often come to me and say, can you get this information on? So yeah, it and we used to do it at Worthing every now and then. Inch would go and see, you see a different game, you see how the opposition press, and Inch is massive on that. You know, the opposition's press gives you our answers to how we play out. So yeah, we have done it before, and as I say, he's already stated that he might do it again one day. I'm not sure, but yeah, it's all comfortable.
Yeah, and what was the ambition for this current season when you all sat down and started planning it in the summer?
I think we strive. Look, at the end of the day, we want to be up there in the mix. But realistically, I think anything sort of mid-table and playoffs would have been seen as a fantastic achievement, and we kick on from there. Obviously, it's going really well at the moment. But yeah, we just need to keep our feet on. You don't really enjoy Cam, you don't really enjoy it as it's going on. You look back on a season and then you think, Carl, that was unbelievable. But when you're managing, especially, I think you're just game to game to game, and literally you sort of enjoy it for 2 hours after the game, and then you're thinking about the next game. And I think that's the way it should be, to be fair.
Yeah. And was kind of like a big emphasis on getting the former Worthing players in? Was there kind of like a, you know, these are the players that we want? I know the players that came here last month sort of said, because they know Hinch's system, that's why they were keen to, you were keen to get them. Was there like a plan B, is what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They did come.
Yeah, obviously we've got to get the recruitment right. I think that, you know, historically the club haven't got it right in the last couple of seasons maybe, and we knew we had to get the recruitment right this summer to obviously be in the position we're in now. If you like, we cherry picked them. We knew working with these guys day in, day out, what they can produce. And we've always said it as well, we need good people in the building. That's key. In any walk of life, if you've got good people around you, you've got half a chance.
Yeah. And I mean, this season's been nothing short of incredible, particularly given where we were in March. What you said that you don't often sit back and sort of review what was good about it, but has it been like a highlight of the season for you so far?
I think Solihull away actually was big. You know, I think an away game on a Tuesday night, they're the sort of results that sort of define your season. We did say the same, unfortunately, about Altrincham, but obviously it didn't go to plan. But I think them sort of games away from home, if you can go in on a Tuesday night and nick a result from somewhere like that, it makes a statement.
Yeah, I mean, 3-0 more than nicking it. But I know your point you're making. I mean, I think Alex Hunt tops the assist charts with 5, but should you be on there for that free kick that Ollie Pearce got against Yeovil?
To be fair, I sent a picture of two inch, about the wall jumping. Like, I saw like a couple of close range free kicks and them jumping every time, and I've given the eyes emoji saying, look, this could happen. And I remember saying to Ollie, actually, just as he's going out, remember the free kick we said about. And yeah, it don't happen usually, but when it does, it's great, and that's what you do the work for.
Yeah. And I think one thing that has impressed me personally this season has been the response to each of the defeats, because there's been, you know, the mentality to just not just avoid back-to-back defeats, but to then go on and win the next game. I think that just shows that the strong mentality of the group is that.
Yeah, the spirit of the group was unbelievable. We had an unbelievable pre-season. I think people have alluded to it. We went to Newcastle. We had the best piss up, if you like, old fashioned, back to the 80s, if you like, and it brought everyone together. We was all in an Irish bar singing together, and every now and then I think you do need that as well. I think now, like, footballers, you know, unfortunately they get a bit of social network and it gets a little bit robotic, but sometimes I just think if you can do stuff like that, it's unbelievable for a bit of team bonding.
And Adam said that he's, you know, very ambitious. Are you similar? Do you see yourself in management again, or do you see your future as a partnership with Adam wherever?
No, I'm Inch's man. I'm very loyal to him. I'm a loyal person. I love learning off him. I love going to work with him every day. And yeah, as long as he wants me by his side, I'll be there for him. Yeah.
And your brother's also assistant manager, isn't he?
He's at Bournemouth.
You're Bournemouth in the Premier League, which is slightly different.
Yeah.
Do you kind of catch up quite regularly? Yeah. Or?
We talk every day. I'm always picking his brain. They play a complete different brand of football. It's all about the press with them, but which is good for us as well, because every now and then I've come up with little ideas about maybe how to press the opposition with things like that. So yeah, it's just balances it off nice with Inch's philosophy with being, you know, possession based. So yeah, it's all good.
And the FA Trophy on Saturday against Darlington, I know you'll want to win every game, but where does it rank in terms of sort of priority. Look, where did it rank as a competition? I think at Worthing.
I think I worked it out. I think it's four games away from Wembley, aren't you? And to be honest with you, I've looked at the Christmas schedule. Everyone goes, "Cars are busy." It's not really that busy. You don't have the game between the Boxing Day and the New Year's Day game anymore. I think we've got a big enough squad to have a go. And I think in every competition, especially, you know, you're not going to win the FA Cup, for instance, but FA Trophy, you've got a good chance. So why not give it a good go?
Yeah. So strong team Saturday?
Yeah, there won't be wholesale changes. There'll be maybe a couple of changes to a couple of key players that we feel that need resting. But, you know, we can't be big time. We've got to be wary of Darlington. They're a dangerous opposition and we've got to treat them with plenty of respect.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time, and we'll have a Q&A with the audience afterwards. But I think everyone.
Tom, man. Cheers.
So I hope you enjoyed listening to some bonus interviews there. These were all originally recorded on the Crux of It platform, so that is just like Hospital Ball, but it's a spin-off version, and it's got lots of York City content on there, so anytime York Hospital Radio attend York City press conferences. We have a semi-regular Crux of It panel sort of podcast where we sort of debate various things that are going on in the season, which always goes down well, and then we also have these live events at Brew York for the Supporters Trust, which, like I say, these were the players, but there's lots of kind of York City ambassadors on there, like Pat Lally, Ian Blackston, Dan Parsler. So if you're looking for more stuff to listen to that's York City related, as we wait for the playoffs to commence and the season to end, then yeah, check that out. It's called The Crux of It. It's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, same places that Hospital Ball is. And as ever, these are all on behalf of York Hospital Radio. We are a charity, 61st year that we've been in existence, but we do rely heavily on funding, donations, so if you are able to donate to us, it's justgiving.com/YorkHospitalRadio. Any donation, big or small, makes a real difference to us, as does sponsoring episodes. So if you want to sponsor anything at the Crux of It or York Hospital Ball, please do get in touch. We have an email address, yorkhospitalball@gmail.com, but also on X, Facebook, just send me a direct message and get in touch. So hopefully just got to do a few more bits of editing to get part two of the 2025 Trust Socials together. But if you've enjoyed this episode, I'm sure you've enjoyed the ones that are on the best of 2025.